The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Cruise Radio.
If this whole thing we're going through right now has taught us anything, it is to always have travel insurance. Get a quote today at tripinsurance.com.
Broadcasting from the tripinsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida.
This is
Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of Cruise Radio, a review of Carnival Conquest today. And as always, Sherry Laskin is here with Cruise News. Hey, Sherry.
Hi, Doug.
More cancellations, and they came on pretty strong over the past couple of days.
Yeah, it's breakneck speed. So the week began with Carnival Cruise Line announcing they've canceled all cruises until October. And this comes on the heels of other major cruise lines voluntarily suspending service until September 15th. Carnival took this measure one step further and extended the pause in service for an additional 15 days. So when the CEO of Carnival Corporation, Arnold Donald, was asked when he thought cruising might begin again, his reply was, and I quote, "I wish I could give you a date, but we can't." He went on to say, "When society is starting to social gather again, then we can begin to talk about cruise." And over at Royal Caribbean, they are following the majority and suspending their cruises up until September 15th. However, their Bermuda cruises are canceled through October. And also under the Royal Caribbean umbrella, Celebrity Cruises and Azamara have suspended their departures through September 15th also.
So on Friday, so, you know, a couple of days before everyone started announcing, CLIA made the initial announcement saying we're going to extend out to September 15th, but it took Carnival a couple of days, then Royal Caribbean one more day after that. You would think everyone would be on the same page, right?
Yeah, and I think the word voluntary played a part in this. You know, it wasn't a mandate, mm-hmm. as far as I remember.
Yeah, it's just weird because, like, with Carnival and Royal being a CLIA member, though, you would think everyone would kind of be on the same page and announce at the same time, but they didn't, so here we are. So Virgin Voyages says they could start offering testing.
Yes, and Virgin Voyages has begun to reveal little bits of what they're calling their Voyage Well Health and Safety Guide. So with plans to begin cruising late fall, Virgin has set up a team of health experts, organizations, and biotech companies, and it's this team's job to establish the protocols to try and keep everyone healthy while cruising, of course. So one of the team's first priorities is to work with medical testing developers and come up with a reliable and quick COVID-19 test. And of course, this is to ensure that those who test negative are the only ones that are allowed to board. But, you know, that remains to be seen how reliable this will be. They could be quick, but before and during the cruise, there will be advanced cleaning tools like fogging and UV technology. They said all luggage and staterooms will be fogged before guests get to their stateroom. And to accomplish a lot of this, Virgin Voyages is partnering with a company called Atmos Air Solutions. And they're supposed to be able to bring fresh air into all staterooms and public places and at the same time filter out 99.9% of airborne bacteria and viruses. They're going to use the thermal cameras like everybody else is saying they're going to use at embarkation. And during the cruise, of course, checking for temperatures from everybody. And as for wearing masks, the cruise line said they will follow whatever guidance is recommended on land. And they stated, if people are advised to wear masks on land, we will do so at sea as well. And since their ships are designed without the traditional buffets, that isn't even an issue.
They're going in the right direction. Like, I think they have been the most forthcoming out of all the cruise lines. Everyone else is saying, yeah, we're going to put some air filters in, use thermal technology. But I think Virgin is kind of leading the way here. And it's nice to see because they're a brand new cruise line.
Yeah. And I think they're, you know, right now they're really just working with one ship. You know, the Valiant Lady is not ready yet. So they, you know, this is like the test sub, the guinea pig ship, really. And they could probably implement all sorts of you know, top level technologies for health and safety, because it's just one ship. It's not, you know, it's a tiny fleet of one.
And last Thursday, Carnival Corporation had their second quarter earnings come out, and they took quite a hit, like a $4 billion loss. But buried in there towards the very bottom, it said they've already actually sold a few ships, and one of those ships is the Costa Victoria, rather. That one's going to, what, a shipyard over in Europe?
Right, that's what they said.
Which leaves five more. Any clue which ones?
Well, while an announcement has not been made that names the ships involved in the upcoming sale, Arnold Donald defended the rumor about fantasy-class ships being first in line. He said that fantasy-class ships are really popular, and he basically doesn't want to mess with success. And it's also rumored that one of my favorite ships, Holland America Mazdam, might be sold in the near future, too. So we'll just watch and see what old ships are going to leave and either go for scrap or some second or third party cruise line.
Boy, Carnival's messaging sucks, because if you go on any of the brokers' websites out there, that's where these people, the cruise lines, go to list ships they want to sell. You'll see like three fantasy class ships out there, some other cruise lines, Royal Caribbean ships, celebrity ships are on there. Fantasy's definitely going, which is sad because it's one of my, it was my very first cruise in the mid 90s.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too.
A port executive in Nassau gave a pretty bold statement of what can be expected when cruising resumes to Nassau.
Yeah, so he was at a meeting. So officials in Nassau are, of course, warning local businesses, especially those in the downtown area, that, of course, this is going to be a tough year without the cruise ships bringing in passengers. And it was mentioned that when ships finally return, there will be two scenarios playing out. One, of course, there will be fewer ships arriving and they'll be carrying fewer passengers. And the second idea expressed was that passengers who want to go ashore may have no choice except to visit Nassau as part of an organized ship shore excursion. So, you know, sadly enough, passengers won't have the chance to simply browse the shops along Bay Street or a little bit off of Bay Street. And the reason given is, of course, the cruise lines don't want their passengers to mix and mingle ashore and then possibly return to the ship with the case of coronavirus while in Nassau. But either way, you know, it just doesn't bode well for the shop owners and restaurants and even the Nassau-based tour operators. And I would guess for at least the rest of this year.
I mean, it's important to say this is not set in stone. This is just what the port executive said at a meeting earlier this week. But
it's just... just a prediction.
Yeah, but it could come to light. And it looks like your former home port is getting one more cruise ship.
I know. So MSC announced last week they're going to be moving north to the Space Coast to Port Canaveral. And it's interesting to note that the Italian-themed cruise line never had any of their ships home-ported at Port Canaveral. So originally, MSC Divina was going to be their first ship there, and that was going to be March of 2021. But this week, they've sort of sped it up a little bit, and they've announced that this coming November, MSC Seaside will move up the coast to Port Canaveral, and then that ship will claim the title of first MSC ship to offer cruises from Central Florida. MSC Seaside plans for 3, 4, and 7-night cruises out of Port Canaveral through March of 2021, and then when Seaside leaves, that's when MSC Divina will still move up and take Seaside's place with the same itineraries and departure schedules. And the ports offered from Port Canaveral will be Grand Cayman, Cozumel, Nassau, and then a stop at their private island in the Bahamas, Ocean Key Marine Reserve.
I was speaking with the PR people over at MSC, and they told me that these ships are going to be doing extended stays over at Ocean Key. So it has me wondering, they didn't confirm if it was overnight or not, if it was going to be like an overnight there, because, you know, they do have the nighttime facilities and everything.
Yeah.
Or if it's going to be one of those, you know, double dips like Disney does over at Castaway or Royal Caribbean does at Perfect Day, where they leave for the night and come back the next morning.
Yeah. And you know, when they're doing this in the wintertime too, it'll be darker earlier. So they'll do their light show. Mm-hmm. You know, they could book it out of there by, 10 p.m. rather than 1 or 2 in the morning too. So we'll see what their schedule is going to look like.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the local, probably the laws and regulations with operating the casinos and opening your stores if you're along the pier or if you have to go out to do that, I guess. There's probably a lot of things we don't even think about. So let's see here. Ellie has our listener question this week. Email yours to doug@cruiseradio.net. This one's right up your alley, Sherry. What are the top three things to do in Ketchikan, Alaska? We are in our early 30s and very active.
Yeah, well, Ellie, the first thing I'm going to mention, and Doug, you're probably sick of me saying this already, before you buy your plane tickets, make sure you know the travel requirements needed to enter Alaska from the lower 48. Those are changing all the time. But Ketchikan, for active people, well, for anybody, but if you're looking for active adventures, Ketchikan really has a lot of them. And they're not cheap, really, but you can go flight seeing and hike glaciers. Or you could take a float plane into the Tongass Forest, and you can go on a forest hike, and you could run into bears and deer. Well, hopefully not run into them, but you would see them. If you want to get, you know, your muscles moving, there's kayaking, fishing for halibut or salmon. And there are separate float planes that go into bear country where the salmon are running, and it's salmon season right now. So if you're planning June or July or August, definitely find out about where the salmon are running. If you could hike into where the bears might be. There's zip lines. I know this is more than three, but you know, there's so much to do up in Alaska. And also Allen Marine Tours, they operate the majority of the wildlife tour boats. It's a little more tame, but you could always, if they're running, you could take their Misty Fjords and wildlife boat tour as well. But no matter what you decide to do this summer, and assuming it's this summer, call the tour operators first or check out visitketchikan.com. And you can see online, it's not the greatest website in the world. Their brochure is actually a little easier to read through, but Ketchikan is great. And if you do nothing else, if money is an issue, or not an issue, but you know, if you don't want to spend $400 per person to take a float plane up to see the bears, you can always walk into town from the port. There's just a lot to do that, you know, if you just want to take a break from being super active, you can do that too, and it won't cost you anything.
So the three things that I've done that I absolutely loved, and they're all pretty random, was the first one was the flight seeing tour in the Crab Feast at the Ponce. Is it Ponce Inlet Lodge? I get it confused with St. Augustine down the street here. It's the George Ponce Lodge or something like that. There's walking down Creek Street and watching the salmon spawn. That was crazy, man. Those jokers have some strength behind them.
You can just stand at that bridge and watch the salmon fighting their way up
all day. And then years ago, I did the Deadliest Catch boat. So
I did that too. Yeah. That was so much fun.
Yeah. So there's a lot to do in Ketchikan, and if you have a chance, really get off the ship and make the most of your day there, because there is so much to do up there in Alaska. And I'm sure once cruising ramps back up, they're really going to need the tourism dollars. We've been speaking with Sherry Laskin from CruiseMaven.com. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Doug.
If you have an Amazon Alexa-enabled device, ask her to enable the Cruise Radio News skill so you can get daily updates anytime. Straight from Cruise Radio.
The question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer. If you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at TripInsurance.com. Not only does TripInsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, TripInsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out TripInsurance.com.
Check out our blog, the video page, and interact at cruiseradio.net.
So a few months ago, Michael and his family went on a cruise aboard Carnival Conquest. It was a 7-night Caribbean cruise out of Port Miami. Michael joins us on the line. How you doing, bud?
Hey, doing great, Doug. Thanks.
Yeah, man. Good to talk to you again. So as we always do, we'll take a step back before we actually talk about Conquest. What made you want to take this 7-night cruise out of Miami?
So we live up in Tampa, so about five and a half hours from Miami. But the cruises that leave from Tampa are kind of limited, right? Most of them are shorter 4 or 5 day cruises, and we wanted to go on a little bit longer. So basically, I just called up my travel agent. And I told her, look, we're looking to go on a 7 day cruise. We prefer a Carnival, and we're looking for 2 cabins this time instead of everybody in an interior. And we could go anytime from January through March. And so she looked at all, and basically there was 2 dates that worked, both in February, and same cabins on the Conquest. And we said, okay, well, we'll go with a cheaper one. And so we ended up with 2 Ocean View cabins on the Riviera deck all the way aft. You know, a lot of people don't realize that the options for families of 5, because it was my wife, myself, and our 3 kids, mm-hmm. For adjoining cabins are really limited. When you look at those deck plans and you see the adjoining cabins, they sell them very specifically. So if you're wanting 3 in 1 and 2 in another, you kind of have a lot of limited choices.
Gotcha. So you make your way to Port Miami. Now, you're over in Tampa. A curious question, because I've never actually have taken this route before. Do you actually cut through Alligator Alley when you're driving to Miami from Tampa?
Yeah, we do. So there's a couple of different ways you can go. You know, you could go on I-4 across and then, you know, down 95. But usually we go all the way down 75 and then across Alligator Alley. And I drive it for work pretty regularly. And, you know, you see a lot of alligators and stuff. So I was telling the kids, you know, oh, keep your eyes out for alligators. And of course, we didn't see any. So but that's just how it goes.
Is it really as desolate as they say? Like, can you go miles without seeing like a gas station or a store or anything?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's one stop about halfway, I think, and then another one further on one of a Indian reservation that's got some gas and food and stuff like that. But it's pretty remote down there.
Okay. So you make your way to Port Miami. Any pre-cruise time there?
No, unfortunately, my daughters had a dance recital the night before, so we did that, and then we just left early the next morning. I think we left around 6 o'clock and got down to Miami around lunchtime.
So you get to Port Miami. How was embarkation for Carnival Conquest?
It was good. The parking area was excellent. We got a open lot, not a garage, so, you know, hot Florida sun, but that's all right. But got an open lot right across the street, so 2-minute walk from the ship. Walked over at our appointed time, which I think was 12:30, and basically walked on the ship. You know, of course, go through security and all that sort of stuff, but didn't have to really stop once.
Okay, so from curb to ship, how long?
Maybe 15 minutes. And most of that was just because of the length of the walk.
Not bad. Now, are you platinum or anything with Carnival?
No, I'm not actually. So I think gold or something like that, you know, 30 cruise days or more, whatever it is.
Gotcha. Okay. So you make your way on Carnival Conquest. What were your first impressions?
It's really nice. It's, you know, it's one of the bigger ships, the Conquest class. Well, bigger for me anyways. I think this was maybe the largest ship that we've sailed on. And I've done over 25, 30 cruises at this point, but most of them have been on the smaller ones. So it's definitely a large ship. It was really pretty. We liked all the artwork that was all around. And, of course, that beautiful atrium that's got all the French Impressionist motif going on and all that. So the kids and us were very impressed with it just first walking on the ship.
Now, are you the kind of cruiser that really digs, like, the Joe Farkas artwork with the paintings, the motifs and everything? Or do you like the newer ships that are more like a modern, contemporary, like, Caribbean resort?
Well, you know, actually, I like both and I can appreciate both. So I'm a big fan of Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. I always joke that, you know, I don't gamble because I don't like wasting money on that, in my opinion anyways. But I love Las Vegas. I love the scene. I love the lights, the colors. So I do enjoy the Farkas look.
Yeah.
I think I like the individuality that each ship has. And though I like the classic ocean liner look and all that, I feel like they can start just having a theme of luxury. Mm-hmm. And they all start blending together. Yeah. So I do like that for sure. But also I can appreciate the Farkas looks.
Yeah. So you mentioned you had adjoining staterooms. So you go to your stateroom. What were your impressions?
First was how large they were. Honestly, they seemed very good sized. They had the nice big window that had a little area where the kids could sit in. Basically just like almost, I don't know what's the right word. It's like a little alcove by the window. They could set up their little things in there. And all, and it was nice. The bathrooms had kind of been refreshed, I guess, a couple of years ago. And there was the curtain, of course, but that's to be expected. But we felt it was a very good value for what we got for both rooms.
Now, just to be clear, you do not have to be a kid to sit up there, because whenever I sailed that ship, I had one of those alcoves and I actually sat up there and worked. I typed away.
So, okay, so I'll admit, yeah. My wife and I went on an anniversary cruise a few years ago. I would get up there, I'd shut the curtain, I refer to it as the balcony.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I agree.
Fair enough. So let's talk about the dining on Carnival Conquest. There's a couple of dining venues, but not a lot. So we'll start at the main dining room. What time dining did you have, and how was your experience?
Yeah, so we were in the main dining room, of course, and we had the early dining experience. I prefer that myself. I have done the anytime as well, but I kind of like having a set time with the same wait staff and everything. Our staff was excellent. Our assigned table was kind of unfortunately tucked away in a corner. I'm assuming they did that because of our kids. I'm not really sure, but they were, you know, very well behaved or anything. They know how to act on a cruise ship or in a restaurant. But in any case, it was really nice. And they actually served us very quickly every night, not too fast, but an appropriate amount of time.
Did any meals really stick out to you?
You know, we all enjoyed the chocolate melting cake. I think everyone who sails on Carnival does. So we made sure to get that every night. Had a steak one night that was really good, too. I can't remember the cut that it was. And my daughter really likes the chilled soups, which they're not my thing, but she seems to enjoy them a lot.
There you go. And so the buffet, which we probably won't see a lot of moving forward, but how was the food there during your cruise?
It was good. Yeah, you're right. Things are kind of changing, aren't they? But yeah, no, the buffet itself was really excellent. They kept it very clean the whole time. There was no spills or anything like that around. We felt like the food was all overall pretty fresh. We sailed on Paradise last year, and I felt like this was a bit of an upgrade from that. And of course, you've got the Pizza Pirate in the back there, which my kids really enjoyed. That's always very slow. I wish they would have maybe one or two recently prepared, you know, pizza pies sitting there, so you don't have to wait for a specialty pizza. On the other hand, it is extremely fresh. So,
now I have to ask you, how about Guy's Burger Joint in the Blue Iguana Cantina?
Oh, yeah. Gotta love those. We enjoyed those. I think pretty much every day we'd get a burger. My wife loves the tacos from Blue Iguana, so that was definitely a highlight for all of us. In the afternoon, we enjoy getting some French fries from Guy's.
Yeah, good afternoon snack there. Before, actually, you know what? You get back from the excursion, you go to Guy's Burger Joint, you OD on fries, take a nap, then go to dinner.
There you go. That's exactly that's what you do. It's
absolutely
a cruise.
Yep. Well, let's talk about entertainment on this 7-night cruise. What did you think of the shows in the theater?
We thought they were really good. The cast did an excellent job. They were, you know, well prepared for everything. They definitely seemed like they knew their acts. Now, of course, when you sail on Carnival a couple of times, you start recognizing the shows, the playlist productions that kind of go across the different ships. But also, on the same hand, we kind of like that. My kids look forward to seeing the 80s rock show, you know, and that sort of stuff. So even though it was a repeat from last year, actually two out of the three shows, I actually say we enjoyed that. We liked it.
Do they have Country Roads on there?
They didn't. No, not this time. Instead, the third one they had was a love theme. I think I'm assuming because we were so close to Valentine's Day. Mm.
Yeah, they have that one, like, I think it's called like Amore or something like that.
I think that may have been what it was. Yeah.
How about the entertainment outside of the theater, like comedy or maybe the venues playing music, etc.?
Yeah, so obviously because we're with the kids and, you know, they're 11, 8, and 6, so we don't get to enjoy a lot of the extra entertainment that we might after a show or something to that effect. But we did go to one of the comedy scenes for that was family friendly, and it was good. I do not remember the gentleman's name, but he was fine. I wouldn't say he was incredible, but he was definitely good. Outside of that, we did stop a few times to listen to the, you know, string quartet, and were able to enjoy those. I would say, however, they had some music up on deck, and some of that music was, it's not a family cruise per se, but some of the songs they were playing, I was like, ooh, that's not appropriate for everybody to be hearing.
Getting edgy there, right?
Yeah, yeah. Songs maybe I would appreciate, but probably right. Not something I want my 11-year-old hearing either.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about the sea days on this 7-night cruise. How were they as far as crowds and congestion?
Yeah, so the weather was absolutely perfect the entire time we were there. So pretty much everybody was out on deck. It was a little bit difficult to find some deck space about midday, but if you got out there a little bit earlier, we could. We were always able to find somewhere on the back above the Serenity decks, so that worked out well for us. But the ship itself handled the sea days perfectly well. There was not really any congestion or anything like that around.
I'm trying to think now. The Serenity on this ship is actually... It's in the very back, right?
Yeah, you know, the Serenity is in the back, And then they've also got, they call it the Sky Pool, which is all the way aft as well. Mm-hmm. And that is, at least on this ship, the Conquest, reserved for adults. I don't know if that's the case across other Conquest class, but this one it definitely is. So even though the aft pool wasn't technically all adults around it in the deck area, it basically was, simply because the fact that the pool was reserved for adults.
Yeah, Carnival Pride has that back area as Serenity, as well as the Fantasy class ships, but kind of different because you're used to the Serenity, at least on the bigger ships, being, you know, front and top. Mm-hmm. So a little different there, but it all worked out for you, it sounds like. How about as far as like lines to eat and everything on the Sea Days?
Yeah, everything was pretty good. We made a purpose to get there slightly early for like lunch, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, as typically happens, the barbecue would become really crowded around, you know, noon, 12:30. But if you got there a little bit earlier, it was totally fine to get in line right before they opened. And then for breakfast every day, we actually ate in the restaurant instead of the buffet. My wife prefers that, and I'm perfectly fine with that as well.
Now, you mentioned that you don't gamble, but as far as the casino, I know you have to walk through it to go from point A to point B 9 times out of 10 on Carnival Conquest. So how was the smoke situation passing through?
It was slightly noticeable, I'd say, but it was not bad. I mean, I think a lot of that depends on maybe the time of day you're going through, right? If you're in the late evening, it's probably a lot of smoke here. But during the regular day, I don't really remember noticing anything at all.
So on this 7-night cruise, you went to Grand Turk, St. Thomas, Amber Cove, and San Juan. Go ahead and give us a highlight from each port.
Yeah, sure thing. So first stop was at Grand Turk, and we did the Grand Turk sightseeing like tram tour that goes around the islands. You see all the main sights, which, you know, it's a small island. There's not a whole lot to see. So we really enjoyed that. The price was very affordable, too. I think for a whole family of five, it was like $75 for most of a day. And we got to see the donkeys and all that sort of thing. So that was a lot of fun. Then after lunch, we just hunted at the beach just right there by the cruise ships. Next stop was in San Juan, which we were actually really surprised. We kind of thought the kids would not be so interested in seeing the old town and all, but in fact, they were. We just got off the ship, and I think we docked around 1 o'clock and walked to the fort, spent some time there, walked through town, got some pastries called Mallorcas, or this little pastry place in the old town. Then just, again, continued walking around the old town, seeing the sights, had dinner, and went back to the ship. And I think that was almost the kids' favorite day, which really kind of surprised us. The next stop was in St. Thomas, which, as you were, has a gorgeous sail in and sail away, so you can't miss that if you're going to St. Thomas. We were supposed to dock over at Crown Bay, but actually ended up at Havensight instead. So that kind of changed our plans. But we just planned a beach day. So we went over to Sapphire Beach or Sapphire Bay. We were going to take a taxi, but then I decided, well, let's take one of those little, I think they call them the jungle buses or something like that. They're the local buses. They're supposed to be a dollar. But we found out that when a ship is in port right there, you can't exactly catch them at the dock because everybody was trying to pick up, you know, lots of passengers instead of just, you know, one family. So instead, we kind of walked a little bit. And then I think it was just a gentleman who decided he could make a couple bucks by taking us to the beach. So he stopped and and I paid him $15 and he drove us over to the beach. And coming back there, we just took an official taxi back to the dock. That was a great day. I would highly recommend the Sapphire Beach. It was beautiful, just incredible. Nice little beach bar there that we purchased lunch at. And then our last stop was in the Dominican Republic at Amber Cove. And there I actually hired a private tour. So you have to walk outside the gates of Amber Cove to access them because, of course, it's owned by Carnival Corp. And that worked out really well. It was a private little van for just our little family. They spoke English extremely well. They told us the history of the area. They took us up to the sky ride that takes you to the top of the mountain, to a rum factory, to a Larimar, which is a stone factory, and then around the town to see the historical sites, and then back to the ship. It was a good value for all of us, and we really got to see pretty much everything in the area. If I were to go back there, I think I'd want to do the 27 waterfalls. That sounds like a lot of fun to me. Mm-hmm. But for the younger kids, I was told that probably wouldn't be that appropriate for them to be able to do all that hiking and all that sort of stuff there.
So with Amber Cove, did a lot of folks who I interview have said they don't really feel comfortable going outside of the gate at Amber Cove? How was your comfort level walking outside the gate?
Oh, really well. In fact, so yeah, I'll comment on that. I mean, even if I had just taken a taxi, for instance, and not hired the guide, I still would have felt comfortable. The town itself, the government, I assume it is putting a lot of money into. A lot of the buildings were being painted and spruced up. When we were walking around the town, even though, again, we had a guide with us, I didn't see anything that would be questionable or make me feel concerned at all.
And back to San Juan, you said you went to the pastry restaurant called, was it Mallorca's?
I believe it's called Mallorca's. The name of the pastries are Mallorca's, and I think that's the name of the pastry shop as well. They're only open until, I think, 3 p.m., so we docked at 1, and we had to get there pretty quick. My wife and I had eaten there about a year before we had been in town, and so we were able to enjoy that and wanted to bring the kids there. They're kind of like almost like a homemade donut, I guess, with cheese on the inside or plain as well, and they have powdered sugar all over the top.
I was wondering, because a lot of people talk about that place, and I've never actually been myself. I always go to the, I think it's called Barrichino's, where the original pina colada was made. I'm probably butchering the name, but I always go there as kind of like my staple stop in San Juan. But I'll have to try Mallorca's there next time. So,
oh, yeah. You definitely want to try it out. It's delicious.
Yeah. So you make your way back to Port Miami. How was disembarkation?
Great. It was no problem at all. We were assigned a later disembarkation, which was totally fine with us. So we were able to, you know, grab a breakfast for the buffet that day and hunt around for a little bit. The weather was not nice. It was kind of cloudy and overcast that day, but we just waited for our numbers to be called and almost literally walked off the ship. There really was no lines or anything like that. It was really excellent.
Any first-time tips to offer anyone either sailing the Eastern Caribbean or Carnival Conquest?
Yeah, so I would say if you're on a Carnival Conquest ship, I would prefer a higher floor simply because if you're aware, Doug, you know, you've got that second restaurant that's situated right in the center of the ship, right? And so if you're below that, you kind of feel like you're going up to go down. You see what I'm saying? So you'll walk up three flights and then have to walk down two because the other side of it just to go around that restaurant. So, you know, it's not a big deal, but it would be if affordable or anything like that. Of course, if you were a little bit higher, you wouldn't be experiencing that at all. And then for the Eastern Caribbean, you know, I'd say going in the winter, of course, is perfect because the weather is really excellent. Rains a lot less, but of course, you know, no hurricanes as well.
Yeah. We actually flew down to San Juan and St. Thomas in January. And I mean, talk about just the perfect time to be down there. You know, where back in Florida, at least here in Jacksonville, it was like in the 40s and getting down to the upper 20s at night. So it was nice to be, you know, tooling around in the 80s for a couple of days at least.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's just so beautiful down there. You know, it's well worth a cruise. We want to do the Western Caribbean sometime with the kids as well because you can go to Belize and all that. But this was really an excellent family trip for us.
Looking back, what was the biggest highlight of this cruise?
You know, being on this different ship than previously, because we've been on three cruises with the kids and two of them were on Paradise. So this was a nice change for them. It's so much bigger. And just the decorations are really interesting. They're all over it. So that was definitely a highlight. Having the two cabins for me was definitely a highlight as well. Not all of us in one small interior space.
Going to throw you a curveball here because I know you have three kids. What are your thoughts cruising post-COVID? Are you going to take any extra precautions? Are you going to wait at all? Or give me some feedback here.
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent question. In fact, friends of ours have asked us the same thing. As you're aware, from past interview, one of my daughters is a cancer survivor. Mm-hmm. She's doing great now, and her immunity is all back to normal levels at this point. So we are acutely aware of these sorts of diseases and infections and all that sort of thing. And so I would say our only additional precautions would be, you know, washing hands better, that sort of thing. But no, we're not overly concerned with that. I think the ships do an excellent job keeping everything clean and doing the best to their abilities. So we will go on cruises and I would book one, you know, August 1st if I could.
Nice. I have one on August 1st. I'm just curious if it's going or not. So I guess we'll have to stay tuned and see if that's going to happen. So final thoughts of Carnival Conquest.
Yeah, I would say absolutely consider it. If you're looking at maybe a cruise out of Miami, it's definitely one to think about. It's a nice size ship. It's not as huge as a lot of bigger ones, but it's definitely an excellent vessel, and I would sail it again.
Michael, thank you so much for sharing this review, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks, Doug.
All right, Dougie, let's see what we got here, buddy. Ba-ba-ba-da-ba-da. Cruise Radio is produced weekly in Jacksonville, Florida. For partnership opportunities, email Doug at cruiseradio.net. Hear Cruise Radio on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, the Stitcher Radio Network, Google Play, or at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.